I'm Jamie, a.k.a. Scumboy.
I'm Andrew Walsh, a.k.a. Bat Phantom.
I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast.
A proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor today. My name is SP, and your reporters for this episode number 189 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Is that my hood? It looks good on you.
Like the hoodie. Yeah. And Michelle.
If it takes more than an hour, I'm going to start breaking fingers.
I'm not ever crossing Thea on anything longer than an hour ever again. Mm-mm. This podcast is recorded on Sunday, March 11th, 2018, live via Geeks.live.
That's right, and this evening we'll be discussing Arrow, as well as news, interviews, and announcements that have dropped in the previous week that could and very well will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as the greater DC CW television universe, including shows like Legends Tomorrow, The Flash, Vixen, Constantine, and who knows what else they're going to come up with now.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. That about wraps up the administrivia. Let's get right into the episode. So, Michelle, let's break it down.
Yes, this is Season 6, Episode 15, called Doppelganger. It aired Thursday, March 8, 2018, directed by Kristen Wendell. This is a former editor, edited 16 episodes of Alias, 13 Blindspot, and 33 episodes of Arrow, has directed one episode of Blindspot and two episodes of Arrow. Our writing team consists of Christos Engage and Ruth Fletcher. They both have story by credits. And what's interesting is that they were both staff writers on Daredevil for 13 episodes, and they wrote an episode of Daredevil, and they have one credit for Arrow. And the teleplay was done by Speedweed, a name we know, written Seven Haven, 12 episodes of Arrow. He's a name that we talk about a lot.
I was really excited when I saw Speedweed's name come across as teleplay by and the credits and the opening credits. So I was like, Speedweed, I forgot he's doing this. Speedweed! Yay! So we'll talk about the episode in a second, but let's talk about how the rest of the public felt about the episode. We're going to talk about the ratings. We're going to talk about the ratings for all the CW shows for last week, starting on Monday, the 5th of March, Legends of Tomorrow with their 13th episode of their third season. Remember, they're taking the spot of Supergirl until they finish out their run. Had a live rating of 1.19, but they were up against The Voice and The Bachelor finale. And for those of you that don't know, The Bachelor, who I don't care for the show at all, but they tried to recreate one of the great ratings bonanzas that they had in the show again. So it drew a lot of people in on that. I didn't care for it at all, but that's what Legends of Tomorrow was up against. So I understand the ratings at 1.19. On Tuesday, the 6th of March, Flash, with their 15th episode of the fourth season, had the episode Enter Flash Time with a live rating of 2.04. That's getting dangerously close to that 2 level, which I didn't think Flash would ever go under. And then really following Flash, Black Lightning, with their 7th episode of the first season, had a live rating of 1.46 with the episode titled Equinox, The Book of Fate. Now, separated from the rest of these by one day, Thursday, the 8th of March, Arrow, with the 15th episode of the 6th season, in an episode entitled Doppelganger, and in my opinion, one of the better episodes of the season, had a live rating of 1.0. 0.28. That's, again, dangerously close to the series low, but it's been hovering between that the entire season, and it's just a shame when we have good episodes like this. So that's the ratings. Michelle, what about the theme?
Well, this episode was called Doppelganger, and we are dealing with Earth 2's Laurel Lance, who is Black Siren. She has decided to pretend to be Earth 1's Laurel Lance. So we have a doppelganger taking over a dead woman's life and creating chaos in that regard, because everybody was like, weren't you dead? Like, there was a body and the whole thing. So there we go.
Even the doctor said, yeah, I did the autopsy. I declared her dead. But when you're talking a world that somebody can run faster than the speed of light, who knows what's possible?
I suppose anything's possible, she said. Yeah, I don't know. Again, part of me is going, but yeah, you did an autopsy. How do you fake that? And the real question is, they're doing a DNA test like they talked about. The fact that she's a meta, does that show up differently? Does it mutate her DNA in some way, shape, or form? So that when that comes back, that's their MacGuffin to make, you're not Laurel Lance, you're something else, someone else.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Chris. And I believe when The Flash, when they were going between the different Earths, didn't they say that different people vibrate at different frequencies? And I'm wondering if that would show up in a DNA scan or not. My guess is no, but I don't know for sure.
Well, there was that, and wasn't there some blood type that is unique to Earth 1, or Earth 2, rather, something like that that got brought up in an episode of The Flash last season?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was something. It wasn't even a blood type here. We wouldn't have recognized it. It wasn't like O or A or anything.
Yeah, or some sort of enzyme or something.
So they have a way to write themselves out of it, which is you wait for a DNA test to come back, and depending on the type of DNA test it could be, I guess that takes a little bit of time. So theoretically, she can pretend to be Laurel for a little while longer before they have to undo that. Because does anyone really see this sticking past this season?
No. Well, first of all, I don't think the series is going to get renewed. Michelle would disagree with me, but if the series is renewed, I just don't see that Laurel Lance, Earth 2's Laurel as Earth 1's Laurel Lance. I don't see that happening. I don't see it ongoing. But that brings up a question, Chris. I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but the whole Quentin redemption thing reared its ugly head yet again.
I'm so tired of it. It's so dumb. And they start to come down the path of, well, there's really no coming back from it again. And then they're like, well, she's starting to change. I'm like, Quentin, you're so hurt over your daughter leaving. You can't honestly believe this. Quentin's the only one I can understand that might think there's some sort of redemption, because he can't see past his own grief that Laurel's dead. Everyone else going along with it are morons.
One of the things that she does is she goes immediately to the press, which is brilliant, because now everybody has their eyes on this possible miracle. And that scene in the police station where she's just like, oh, Oliver, never thought I'd see you again. And oh, Daddy, and all this type of stuff. She's playing it really, really well.
She is. And she's playing it to the point where not even the dragon was too mad at her. I mean, he was mad at her, but it was like an instant redemption for his point, because he's like, oh, so you see where I'm going now, and we can mend our fences and get back together. Like, it's no big deal that you almost ran off with the $70 million because, well, I got it back and I need you for some manipulative stuff. So welcome. Come on back. So, yeah, she's playing all sides right now.
Yeah, we'll get more into that as we get deeper into the episode. But one of the things that we enjoy about Arrow are the fights, and we actually have a couple of good ones. Chris, why don't you take us through the first attempt of rescuing Roy?
This is when we find out Oliver has yet another special arrow to add to his quiver. I figure this must be a Cisco special, the firework arrow that he fires off as a distraction. And boy, howdy, does it start up quite a bit of fireworks. And I like their comment of, there's not a home game or something like that, meaning they're used to the fireworks going off for sporting events. But basically, this firework arrow is used as a distraction, as Speedy is going to use one of the, almost like the back grapple arrows, for lack of a better term, to slide over to the other side and sneak in through the air ducts to try and go save Roy. We find out that Roy's just getting the absolute tar beaten out of him. She's able to watch from the ducts, and when the goons leave, Thea drops in to free him. Pretty happy to see each other, I would say. That's where my quote from the pre-show came, of Roy asking about her hood, and Thea lays one on him. But of course, this is not the time to save Roy. The SWAT team starts coming. Thea's ready to basically go to war with them. A fully armed SWAT team. She's going to take them all on. Yeah, Oliver has none of that. And in a pretty cool move, actually, uses a magic arrow basically to grapple her and pull her back across to the other side of the street. And Oliver was totally right. There is no way that Thea and he could have taken care of all of those SWAT team guys and everyone come out unscathed.
It was a good assessment of the situation, one that we don't all the time see with Team Arrow. Usually Oliver just goes in, does everything, but they explain it away. It's like, there's no way that we're going to get everybody out of there alive, including Roy. So let's look for another opportunity. And I have no doubts that Thea and Oliver could have handled that entire SWAT team, but in a small confined space, there was a high likelihood that Roy was going to get hurt. So yes, I get what they're saying, and I'll buy it. I'll buy the explanation. It was a good explanation. I liked it. Although I have a question though. At one point in time, he's getting beat through a phone book. I mean, it was almost padding, isn't it?
Well, I looked at it this way. You know, have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's the scene where they're beating Private Pyle with socks that are full of soap, and basically it's enough that it's able to still do impact but leave less of a mark. And I think that that was the thought there, is hit him through that, the force might get diffused some, but it's still applied, it still does damage, but he doesn't look like he's beat to tar when they take him into the district attorney's office to testify against Oliver. Because remember, he's still got to show up in public and not look like he was coerced? Physically? I don't know.
I think they failed at that, yeah.
It's so good to see Roy, and we see Roy because I loved at the beginning of the episode where Oliver thinks he's going to get freed, but then all of a sudden it's like, hey, we have Roy Harper. And that really gets Thea going because she's in the suit. She immediately is like, where is my super suit?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. What, my super suit?
It was really great to see her back in there, and a little bit of that bloodlust coming back, because she really was ready to take on that SWAT team.
Yeah, she shouldn't have been back out there, though, as long as she'd been on the shelf and after being in a coma for so long. Oliver was totally right, but there's no way you're going to keep her out of it. I think that's going to end up being a liability. If not next week, then, well, I guess that's probably our last chance, because I think that's probably the end of the arc.
Hey guys, you know where Cisco or Oliver or Felicity went to go get those special fireworks that you can impact in the small arrow? Because I would like to get some of those for my drones.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sure. Okay. So they don't get Roy. Roy is taken by Diaz to a different location. That's how Roy gets found. Diaz has people in the, you know, in the cops, and they get Roy. And Felicity is all like, oh, they're going to transport him, and that's how we're going to get him. And they find the van. Thea shoots the van with one of those arrows. Boom. You know, Spartan's like, don't move. Oliver yells like, Roy, step back, step back. And they blow up, and he's not there. And my question is, shouldn't they have known better?
Yeah, if it seems too easy, it probably isn't right, we've learned in this show. And this is one of those cases where you should have been going, this sounds too easy, it's too good to be true.
This is amazing stuff that I think really brings out, and I've been complaining about it for the last month or so, but Richard Diaz, the Dragon, is really steps ahead of Team Arrow. Now, they don't understand that his goal is to take over the city. They just think that somebody was after Oliver because he allegedly killed Caden James' son. So they don't understand the motivations here, and it's hitting them blindsided. So all of this stuff, which seems routine to them, is really not. They're being played, and they are starting to understand that, which is great. This is what I wanted all along for the last 6 months of this show. We're finally getting it now. So I will say kudos to this episode's creative team and the writers for really bringing that out. kudos to Kirk Acevedo for really playing the conniving, manipulating, and very strong, by the way. The fight, I don't believe for one second that was him up fighting. That was a very younger man that was up fighting at the beginning in the ring at the beginning. But he acts like it's him, and it is amazing. And this is what I wanted from that the entire time. I wanted to see that manipulation, and we're finally seeing it.
And Diaz has got some moves, man. We'll get to that later, I'm sure. But at least the stunt double made him look like a badass.
Exactly. The team gets intel from Black Siren, and it actually pays off. It's at this old casino where Diaz has taken Roy. SP, why don't you start us with this is a huge fight.
At the casino with Team Arrow coming in. And it is actually, I was thinking about it. I often hearken back to that season 2 fight, which you have three different fights going on three different levels. This was almost that good. It was, as far as the choreography went, this was that good. But this was almost that good in terms of the shooting of it as well. And this is what we like about the show Arrow. And I'm so glad to see them bring it back. It's been hit or miss this year, more hit than miss, but it's been hit or miss. And you've got all team members fighting in different areas, going after different things, and having to fight different sectors of villains. You've got the remnants of the Bratva in the area. You've got all of Diaz's guys, and he's really hired some fighters, right? And I don't know why, if it's just because of the casino and they're trying to put on a show, or if this is for his personal protection, but these guys know what they're doing, and the dirty cops. So this is an all-on-all fight, and you've got multiple things going on. This is why we watch the show, as I stated before, and I was glad to see it again, and I look forward to more of this in the future, so here's hope.
Chris, what parts of the fight did you enjoy?
I loved the reuse of the arrow throughout, where you shoot one guy, another guy yanks the arrow out and stabs another guy, and I thought that was cool. It's something we haven't seen in a while, and I don't know, it was just fun. It made for a fun, dynamic fight for me. It was something relatively fresh. This was one of the better fights we've had in a while.
I do have a beef about the arrows, by the way, because they're not supposed to be killing anybody, but they're center mass shot.
Oh, yeah, he totally shot a dude right in the center of the chest, and then another guy, like, right here, which is a heart shot. They were totally killing people again.
And Spartan was popping guys off in the head and hitting them center mass too. Now, one could say that you have some body armor on to protect you, but if an arrow goes through that, it's going through that.
I mean, the question is there more force on an arrowhead than there would be on bullets? Because what's the story of World War I? They're firing crossbow bolts at tanks, and because of the force behind that and the arrowhead point, they were going through the armor of the tank and killing folks inside. So I would assume there's quite a bit of force behind Oliver's bow.
Oh, indeed. And the damage, the internal damage, the organ damage, that's what I'm thinking of, because it's right around the heart area or the lung area. I mean, that's not taken care of. It could mean a quick death, or it could mean a death a little bit later. So that is a dichotomy of the show, of trying to show realistic fights yet not kill anybody. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to believe at this point in time. I haven't ever remembered any of the creative team saying what is supposed to be portrayed on the screen or not. So we're left to our own imagination. And I'm thinking these guys are dying, but I don't know. It's up for interpretation.
Yeah, Spartan has a gun, and it's not really clear what type of bullets. I don't think they have the ice bullets from S.H.I.E.L.D. I know it's crossing the streams, but it's never really gone into. But Thea just charges in there. She's got her arrows and bows and that assassin training and taking out guys left and right. And she eventually gets to Diaz. And I love this scene. And she gets him and he tosses a knife and she swats it, and then they fight. And he does end up getting an arrow to Thea's throat, but Oliver fortunately tackles him, and they're there. And what gets me is that Diaz knows everything. He knew where to find Roy. He knew Roy was part of Team Arrow. He knew when he saw Speedy again, you know, he's like, wow, what brought her back? And that line with Oliver, he says, I love it when you visit me, Mr. Mayor. I love it even more when you leave.
This is a great line.
I'm just wondering, how do you think he knows all of this? I know Anatoly knows some of it, and Anatoly is like, I'm staying in town because, okay, I can't go back to Dubrovka. I want revenge and I need money. And I know Anatoly knew some of it. And that's probably where Diaz got some of his intel. But I wonder how in the heck he found Roy.
Caden James, maybe? That was something that Caden had put in motion as something he was looking for to pull Oliver's strings. And as Caden fell, that fell to Diaz to be able to do what he needed there. That's partly what I'm thinking.
Yeah, he has a wealth of resources, could be federal resources. I mean, he does have the FBI kind of sort of in his back pocket, whether they realize it or not. So he could have used those resources, too. So I'm not sure who actually found him or why, but I know that Dragon is really resourceful and controls a lot of puppeteer strings throughout the governmental bodies. So he could have found him that way, too. You never know. I mean, if Felicity and Cisco are able to hack into CCTV cameras in any city, you could set a facial recognition alert in any of those and you can find them. So if they're able to do that, somebody else is probably going to be able to do it too. So just take that for, I believe it happened, and just move on.
And I like how Diaz is so calm because his dirty cops actually call the real cops to the situation, and he's just standing there going, you know, you can't arrest me because of that whole anti-vigilante bill. And he's right.
Yep, he's right indeed. And Oliver is forced to make a decision. Does he stay and go down with Diaz, or does he leave and try to bring down Diaz another way?
Well, Diaz is right, though. He knew he wasn't going to be able to do anything. That's why he told Athea to leave. It was a standoff where they got to stare each other down, but there was no good move for anyone at that point in time.
But it seemed to me that the Dragon had drawn Team Arrow in to get Roy for a reason. Like, this whole episode wasn't for naught. Like, Team Arrow didn't foil any of Dragon's plans. This has been Dragon's plans all along. And I wonder what it is. I wonder what he got out of this week.
So I think the play here is just keep them guessing. If he could have gotten something out of Roy to basically put more pressure on Oliver, that's fine. But here's the thing. They weren't looking deeper into any of Ricardo Dragon's plans he's had going on in the city. They're too busy trying to go and save Roy. So what's going on behind the scenes? And I honestly think there's something that's going to come into play. Go back to the top of the episode where the police captain basically told Oliver, here's how we can get our payroll. We're going to sell off all the stuff that we've been able to clear from criminal enterprises and stuff like that. What is it Diaz wants out of that? I think that is what's going to give us a better impression of what his plans are. There's something in there he wants that he can't go about getting by just stealing it, but he'll sure as heck be out there and probably buy it out in the middle of everything.
Thought the same thing, Chris. And I also thought, why didn't they do this before when the city was at the bankrupt roll? And obviously, it's because the police were in Dragon's payroll, so they didn't want to go ahead and offer it. I mean, you're absolutely right. This is happening because Dragon wants it to happen. And I was also thinking, the city is at tens of thousands. I've said this before on podcasts. I don't believe this is a city of millions anymore, or even hundreds of thousands. I think we're talking tens of thousands of people. If that, at this point, you're not going to get $30 million out of tens of thousands of people. Now, if you bring in people from all over the place to get really cheap, really expensive stuff, like it's like a top end Mercedes or like a Gambit style yacht for pennies on the dollar, yeah, you're going to get other people from out of town interested. So you're going to get out of town money in, but you're not going to get that money from inside the town. Oh no, that's not going to happen.
That is a really good point. I really didn't think about that because Diaz is not upset that Roy is gone. Part of his plan has to do with Black Siren, and Black Siren's in the hospital and she's supposed to get changed, and then she's missing, and Dinah accuses Quentin of, oh, this is you. No, it's actually Diaz's cops taking her to Diaz. And what gets me is first she talks to Anatoly hey, we were betrayed. Aren't you upset? And again, Anatoly's like, hey, I'm with whoever has money and can get me money and keeps me alive, so I'm good. And then she goes in to Diaz and she seems scared. This is a woman who has leveled buildings. Why doesn't she just kill everybody?
Were they still saying she can't use her powers because it basically tears open the bullet wound or whatever? Because that was the implication they'd had from when she got shot, was that if she used her powers, her body couldn't handle it because of the damage it had taken. So maybe that's part of what it is, and the fact that she's still on the mend and can't fight at her peak level is what's coming into play. I don't know.
It's the only explanation I could think of, because there's no reason why she should be actually frightened of any of those people. She should be able to take them on.
Yeah. Then she calls Quentin her father. Did you guys notice that throughout the episode, she keeps saying, my father, my father, my father.
Oh, what better way to play him, though?
She is playing him, plain and simple. There is no redemption going on. She is only doing this to get her ultimate goal of being able to live the high life and not being on the run at all. She knows that she needs the dragon's protection, and she's gaining dragon's protection by actually getting Team Arrow's protection against Black Canary. And I think this all is working in her favor, and she's going to play everybody until it stops working in her favor. So you've got that going on, but this is the type of conniving that I expected from this season, and we're finally getting it in episode 15.
And I'm going to call it now. We're going to get Laurel in the Canary's costume at some point before the end of the year. Calling it right now. She's going to wear the old costume for some reason, and then maybe betray them. I haven't decided yet. I'm not sure whether the final step will be betrayal again or not, because they really want us to believe this redemption arc. I'm not sure I buy it, but I do see them putting her in the costume.
You know what I missed from this episode, though?
What's that?
I missed the Hoss.
Yeah, he's still in a hospital somewhere. Or did he get transferred?
He got transferred. Anyway, this is my next question, is where I want to get to. Last week, we were talking about, are they going to shove a redemption arc down our throat? And considering that Black Siren is now a double agent, is she going to try to do a triple agent thing and still try to be redeemed? Or are we going to actually see her as a villain all the way through?
I think they want us to think that the redemption is still in play. Now, I don't know whether it's going to pay off. I think that Laurel's motivations is to play all sides to get out alive. Now, whether that ends up being the final end step for it, whether she grows a heart or her heart grows three sizes like the Grinch, that's to be determined. And I honestly can't guess at this point.
I hope they don't. And I hope they don't, because this has been a wonderful arc, and if they do, they'll just ruin it. However, if the series does end at the end, then they might do it just to redeem the actor in everybody's eyes and to not put a sour taste in the mouth of the Laurel lovers who, you know, Chris, they're your fan club, right?
Oh, they love me.
Yeah. So I can see that. And we've got a couple of months of episodes left. So if that's the case, if they really aren't going to have any more of the series here, we can see a redemption, and that's the only way I know, but I hope they don't, because this character has killed someone. It's just not redeemable.
Yeah, but people aren't thinking logically about it. They're thinking, oh, we want Laurel back. We're mad Laurel's dead. So part of why people are able to forgive this character is because they just want it to be the Laurel they liked.
Well, I'm mad that Fox canceled Firefly, but being mad isn't going to do anything about it. It's not going to fix it.
Yeah, but this is the internet. There's no logic.
Yeah.
Speaking of logic, Diggle brings up becoming the Green Arrow again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure how I feel about this, like this really big urge of his to become the Green Arrow. I know he wants to be a hero and he's Spartan. SP, what are you thinking? I'm uncomfortable with it for some reason.
If the series continues, I'd be uncomfortable with it. However, if they want to pull off like a Stargate SG-1 and they move some of the characters over from SG-1 to Atlantis, this would be the same thing. Like if they wanted to keep Diggle as the Green Arrow in the suit, or maybe Spartan, I don't know. But if they wanted to keep him as the Green Arrow, they could ship him off to any of the other DC shows, and the Green Arrow could still be on, and it wouldn't be Oliver Queen. So if they ever did want to do a special and get all the actors back and do a special Arrow, then Oliver can come back as the Arrow. Or Stephen Amell. I think, again, we are in a period of uncertainty because we don't know if the show is going to be renewed or not. So anything is on the table. There are certain things that I would hope happen and certain things I wouldn't want to happen. And if the series continues, I don't want to see a John Diggle Green Arrow. I want to see Stephen Amell as Green Arrow. But if the series is over with, then I would be happy still having a Green Arrow character around.
So I kind of understand Oliver's standpoint in all of this about maybe not wanting to give it up again, because now things have changed a little bit. His son is okay with him being the Green Arrow. His family life has settled. So it all works again where he can put that mantle back on. We don't really think he wanted to give up that mantle for good when he did. He did because his son needed him, and because that was the best way to allay his son's fears of losing his father too. So part of it is Oliver doesn't want to give it up again and doesn't necessarily feel the need to, and they're starting to hint at the fact that Oliver doesn't want to give back the mantle. And honestly, I don't think John Diggle needs to be the Green Arrow. I didn't like it when they played that part up at the beginning of this season. I liked him being his own man, about being able to be Spartan or to be Diggle, things like that. Him filling in was one thing. I didn't like the abrupt shift of, all I've wanted to do before is to be the Green Arrow, I want to wear the hood. I was like, but you're your own guy. Why?
Yeah, that's my thought too. All this time, he's always been, I'm Diggle. This is me. You're the Green Arrow. I have my thing. I have my strengths. And I really hope that they get him back to that. And this is just a phase, because I really enjoyed having OTA back. I really liked that. I thought it was great. Tina was like, okay, I'll go help you on this mission. And Oliver's like, I don't trust you. I'd rather be short a person than have you come with me. And the look on her face.
He's right, though.
Definitely right. One of the things we have been discussing is Willa Holland and her commitment to the show. We have been theorizing that perhaps she is leaving. And there was a conversation between her and Thea and Oliver, where he is, Felicity has made me happy. You were always happy with Roy. Maybe you two should sail off into the sunset.
It's just a way to get her off the show, contract-wise, I think.
Again, if the series ends, it's definitely a way to remove the characters from the show in a benevolent way, because every other Queen family member has died when they left the show. So in order to not have a death when it really isn't deserved, then this is a good way to go about it for both characters, right? So I think that I can see this, and if the series doesn't continue, then they've given the characters a good out, and like the series comes to an end, then this is the happy ending for those two. So good on them.
I really want this to happen. I want those two to be together. It was sweet when she goes in to rescue him and she kisses him. And then she's like, oh gosh, I'm sorry. I don't know if you have somebody. And he's like, oh no, no wife, no kids. I hate minivans. And at the end of the episode, she again is like, I don't know, is it? And they're just boom, right back, right where they left off. I love those two together. That's my ship. Like Felicity and Oliver, whatever. I love Thea and Roy together. They're the ones that have a happy ending. To me, it's like if Felicity and Oliver get divorced, whatever. I hope she gets the fern in the custody case. But Roy and Thea, that's the couple I want to have the happy ending. And if it means them both leaving the show for that to happen, I don't want to see Willa Holland go. I love Thea. Then I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Why not?
I'd like to see Willa Holland move on to something where they have an idea of what to do with one of her characters, because Thea's just been twisting in the wind for a while now. well, this week we're going to have her do this. Then we're going to put her in a coma off the island. And I'd like to see her get a chance to actually get to do something from week to week versus have 5 minutes of screen time where she's just basically Aunt Theo or sitting on the sidelines.
She deserves her own main arc. And I don't think she'll ever get that living in the same city and being in the same shadow as Oliver.
I mean, if this is her way of leaving the show, I think that there's open doors to do other kinds of work out there, if that's what she wants to do. And if that's the case, I would watch it. I've come to like her as an actor, and depending on what the show is, I would probably watch. If it's some CW soap opera-y thing, I probably wouldn't watch, though, I'll be honest.
I could imagine her in a major motion picture, either. Heck, I'd like to see her. I don't know if she's done anything, even just on the Hallmark Channel, but yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing great things from her. I don't think she's going to leave acting. I think she wants to move on to bigger and better things.
Oh, SPU and those Hallmark Channel movies.
I know, right?
You know, I was watching one. It had the Hallmark Channel on this weekend, and I noticed a woman that looked familiar, and I had to do a double take, and it took me a couple seconds. So it was the lead actress in 12 Monkeys. I was like, I can't believe she's doing a Hallmark Channel movie. So, yeah, everybody does it.
Everybody. It's like everybody is either on Law and Order or a Hallmark movie. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, since Hallmark shoots in Vancouver, if you are a working actor in Vancouver, it would be silly to turn down a paycheck not to do a Hallmark Channel. And besides, for some reason, they get huge ratings. So, might as well.
That's true. Chris, is there anything else you'd like to discuss about this episode?
I'm looking at my notes right now, and I'm not seeing anything other than the fact that I liked having Dinah back and not seem as crazy as she has in previous weeks. She still is out for blood, but it seems like there might actually be some logic coming into play versus just always being like, I must kill her, willing to take the time to work with Quentin to figure out who the dirty cops are. It gives me hope they might stop making the character be a whack job.
Chris, you hit the nail on the head. We lost the Hoss, and we had Dinah, who was actually thinking with her head on what's best with the city, and then moving ahead to do something with it with somebody involved with Team Arrow. I mean, this is the Dinah that we've all actually enjoyed, and if we finally getting her back, it's awesome, and I can't wait for what happens in the rest of the season with her. But if she goes back to that vendetta, and let's be honest, if Laurel ends up being bad for the rest of the season, we're going to get another canary versus canary fight, then okay, I mean, we'll see what happens, we'll see who wins. And just to maintain comic continuity, I put my money on Black Canary versus the Black Siren.
I just get tired of the argument. She killed Vince, and she killed these people. I'm like, yeah, well, Vince killed a lot of people, too. So let's not imagine that Vince doesn't have blood on his hands. Other thing I had in here was Curtis gets to play the role of dad in My Two Dads, the sitcom, this week. It was pretty great.
That was actually an awful conversation to have to have.
Yes.
So what you're talking about, by the way, for the listener, is that Curtis went in to talk to Wild Dog's daughter, who I can't remember the name of off the top of my head, Zoe. And tells Zoe, I guess, everything, just the way that he was communicating it. So who knows what Zoe's going to do with that information. I think Curtis is being a little unfair to the rest of both team members by being as open as he appeared to be with Zoe.
Yes, but most important out of this episode, though, is it looks like Nyssa will be back, the way they dropped the cliffhanger in there of seeming to have the League of Assassins back in some way, shape, or form. You know that's going to bring Oliver's wife back into play.
I can't wait for Nyssa to be in a scene with Felicity, and she just walks up and says, hello, husband. I want that. I want that so bad. I want Felicity to be like, now, wait a minute.
We've been looking forward to that for months now, ever since the crossover.
I know. Yeah, because at the end of the episode, when Thea and Roy are getting it on, we see someone outside, and this person is obviously a member of the League of Assassins, whatever faction is left, and says, tell the master, my master, we have found the heir to Ra's al Ghul. Which, yeah, I forgot Malcolm, when he died, was still the leader, right? He still had the ring, correct?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Well, he got it back from Oliver, right? Because Oliver had it.
Yes. He gave it to Malcolm.
Then Nyssa melted it down or something. Somebody destroyed it, I thought.
I know the hand got cut off with the ring.
I could have sworn they destroyed the ring when they said the league is over and basically tossed it into a cauldron or a smelter or something like that.
Might have.
Maybe this is a faction who wants to restore the League of Assassins and they want to bring back the old ways. And if that's the case, then Thea would be the head of the League of Assassins. And maybe that's what her and Roy end up going to do. Hey, why don't we hang out with the League of Assassins and chill out that way?
I don't know if Roy would stick around for that, but I know Thea would take that over. Especially with her renewed bloodlust, if that comes back into play. Oh, wouldn't that be terrible if those two broke up because of the bloodlust?
No, Roy is going to stand by her bloodlust and all. And if he is like, okay, honey, you want to be in charge of the League of Assassins, then let's run the League of Assassins.
Okay, shipper.
I told you, this is my ship, okay?
Yeah, well, I hope the best for you. We'll see what happens. I say that a lot, but we're at that point in the season. It's like, well, we don't know if we're going to get renewed or not. We don't know where the series is going to go because of the other shows that CW has that these characters can go off to. So, yeah, it's all up for grabs. There's some great possibilities because of that, too. So we'll have to think of those as the weeks wear on.
Yeah, most likely they'll fight and Thea will be like, I don't want to rule the League of Assassins. And then there'll be a fight that way. And that's how we get Nyssa and all that type of stuff. But I just think it'd be funny if Roy and Thea end up being the head of the League of Assassins.
I wonder if we find out the fate of Talia with all this now, too.
Oh,
they both were on the island, weren't they?
Correct.
Well, we won't find out what happens for 2 weeks.
Spring break!
Yeah, Arrow won't come back until the 29th. But in the meantime, we are going to discuss Legends of Tomorrow. And next week, we are going to discuss Season 3, Episode 4, Phone Home. It originally aired October 31st, 2017. The Legends go back to 1988 to save Ray when they realize he'll die because of their breaking time. Directed by Kevin Mock and written by Matthew Mala.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm looking forward to this, getting back to Legends of Tomorrow, because it's such a fun show, and I can't wait to podcast on it. So this is the ET episode. This happened around Halloween, and just stay tuned to the next episode.
Yeah, it's a very fun episode. Well, if you love Geeky Podcast, we are part of a larger network, the Gonna Geek Podcast Network. And Chris, why don't you tell us about one of the podcasts that's part of the network?
Sure thing, Michelle. So as you guys know, we're part of the Gonna Geek Network. There's 25 plus different podcasts on there. We very well can't come on here each week and read down a promo for every episode of every show that's out. But what we can do is point you to one show and say, hey, you guys might want to go check this out. You'd have a lot of fun with it. And this week, I want to talk to you guys about episode 121 of Better Podcasting, entitled How to Guest on a Podcast. If you're considering being a guest on a podcast, this episode is for you. Steven and SP run down some best practices to help you prepare for your appearance. Check out this and other podcast-related topics in this week's Better Podcasting. So, if you've been dabbling in the hobby of podcasting, you think you're going to be guesting on things, you guys should go check this out. Get some hot tips and tricks on what you should do on someone else's show. Hint for you guys, it's drop all the F-bombs you want, because everybody loves that.
Maybe on your show.
Do it on every show. That's the smartest thing. But guys, looking at the time, looking at our show notes, it is time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to all of our live listeners who tuned in today at geeks.live and participated in the chat room. But also a big thank you to everyone who downloads the audio podcast from startingtribune.com or catches the replays of the video over at youtube.com/gunnageek.
Remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific for you on the West Coast on every Sunday.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode, Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Devious is back.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Nyssa is almost back.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with Thea and Roy forever. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.